Again, I appreciate our the former pastor, retired pastor, a pastor for 31 years being here, and encouraged me when he came in. He said he listened to our services online, and he said, "I think you're preaching truth." I like to hear that from a retired pastor. He's been in the mission, been in the ministry all these years and listens to it, and I appreciate that. Ruth chapter 2. It's good also, of course, the Brother Thomas still has family here with him from the funeral. We're glad that they're here. Be praying for them as they'll be traveling to Idaho for the burial this week. Good to have Brother Nelson's family still here with us as well. We're glad that they're here and hope they're enjoying their visit. Ruth chapter 2, starting in verse number 18, down through the end of the chapter. Ruth chapter 2, verse 18. This is after Ruth. Of course, we have the divine appointment, the divine meeting there with Boaz has taken place. She has spent the day. Of course, it started off where she met Boaz and asked of him and the right to be able to glean in a better position, if you will, along with the women who were his hired workers. And Boaz allowed much more than that. He showed great kindness and compassion. He was even showing love unto her. Now, this is the end of the day. She's returning now back to Naomi after her very first day of gleaning. And it says in verse 18, "And she took it up and went into the city. And her mother-in-law saw that she had gleaned, and she brought forth and gave to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. And their mother-in-law said unto her, Where hast thou gleaned today? And where wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee. And she shewed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought, and said, The man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz. And Naomi said unto her, daughter-in-law, Blessed be he of the Lord. He hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said unto her, The man is near of kin unto us, and one of our next kinsmen. And Ruth the Moabitess said, He said unto me also, Thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest. And Naomi said unto Ruth her daughter-in-law, It is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any other, that they meet thee not in any other field. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. Let's go ahead and pray. Father in heaven, Lord, I love you. Lord, we thank you for your word. Lord, we ask your blessing upon the service today. Lord, number one, I certainly pray that you'd be glorified and honored by all that is said. Lord, help me to stay with your word and with truth. Lord, may you use your word to draw us closer today to you. Change us. Lord, meet the needs that are here. Lord, I pray if there's anyone here who has not truly been converted, Lord, I do pray for their salvation. I pray that conviction and that drawing, Lord, that you would work, that even this morning they would repent and place their faith in Jesus Christ. Lord, may you be glorified. Please use me. Control what I say and how I say it, Lord. I know I need your mercy and grace. Please bless and work. I pray this in Christ's name. Amen. Again, we saw in chapter 1 of Ruth, as we're coming into this book, of how life did not go as expected for Naomi. And that's true for all of us. Many times life goes in a direction that we never expected. She faced shortly after marriage, which was certainly a promising time when she married Elimelech. And you can think of all the hope and the joy and that was in their life at that time. But a famine hits. And because of that famine, her husband makes the decision to leave Israel and head into Moab. So Naomi finds herself dwelling in a foreign country, in a country that really cannot stand those of Israel. While there, her husband dies. It gets more difficult for her. Not only in a foreign land, away from her family, her husband is now dead, but she did have her two boys with her. They get married, but even after 10 years, there's still no children. And after that 10 years, both of her sons die. Just simply tragedy upon tragedy. Her life going another direction than what she never imagined. Full of trials, full of difficulties. And she makes the decision to return to Israel. And we saw in chapter 1 how her daughter-in-law Ruth committed to stay with her. Tell her, thy people shall be my people and thy God my God. Make no mistake about it, a major part of Ruth's decision, not only showing kindness and compassion to her mother-in-law, but also the reality of what she learned from Naomi, what she learned from her husband, and that of the true God, of wanting truth. I'm saying, listen, I am willing to leave my land. And as far as she knew, according to what Naomi told Ruth, she would never marry if she came with her. If she traveled with her, she let her know, listen, you don't understand, we serve the true God. She didn't bring up the idea of a kinsman. She just let her know, listen, you're not going to be able to marry again. I would have to have, in my place, I would have to have a child and raise up. Would you wait for him? And Ruth was committed to truth. So Naomi and Ruth returned. And we saw last week how God began to work. How God has set up that divine appointment, that divine meeting where Ruth determined, listen, I'm going to go out and I'm going to work. I'm going to glean. We saw how that was for those who were poor. They can head out to the fields and God had laws in place for the workers of the field that when they dropped something, they could not pick it up again. That would be for the gleaners that would come behind. And so Ruth went to glean to try and provide for her and her mother-in-law. But while there was that divine meeting that took place when Ruth and Boaz met. We saw how God divinely was directing, how divinely providing, how Boaz immediately took notice of Ruth. How he showed such great kindness and compassion. How he allowed her to glean right among the women, right among his hired servants. How he even told his servants, listen, when you're putting those sheaves together, when you're putting those stacks together, you let some drop on purpose for her. How he invited her to the lunch, sat at his table. It showed incredible kindness. And we left off. Ruth was going to be returning home that day with about 30 pounds of food. Remember, she would have went back. She would have got rid of the chaff. She'd have been bringing back the grain and that's it. She still had 30 pounds. More than a month's worth that she got in one day. Now, we're going to see today in our text how when Ruth returns after her first day of gleaning, Naomi's bitterness begins to turn to joy. We're going to see from this a pattern of how to take bitterness into joy. When you have a root of bitterness that is springing up, that is something you need to remove, to get out quickly. It's a strong poison in your life. It begins to take over and deteriorate your life that God has given you. It opposes forgiveness. It refuses grace. It loves misery. It thrives on depression. It's something that needs to be dealt with swiftly and with God's help. Naomi had bitterness starting to spring up in her life. She went through horrible, difficult trials. And many times that can set the stage for bitterness to come in because the mind games begin. And that happened with Naomi. The mind games begin after all the trials that she was going through. She found herself and with a wrong view of God Himself. She blamed God for all of her trials. God did this to me. When you're going through trials, you have a wrong view of God. It's like putting the welcome mat out for bitterness to come in. She forgot how good God is. However, as we're going to see today, she took action to remove it, and it didn't take long. I'm going to put our text, I put it into three different A's for those of you who like to write down the outline. The first one we're going to look at here in these steps to going from bitterness to joy is the action of others, the acknowledging of God, number two, and number three, acting on what God has shown you. So the first thing we're going to see here is the action of others. When somebody is in that place of bitterness or depression or sadness or that those mind games taking place, many times we need the help of the actions of others in our life. Look at verses 18 and 19. This is Ruth leaving And she took it up, all that she had gleaned that day. In process, she's already removed the chaff, and she's on her way back home. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned and brought forth and gave to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. And her mother-in-law said unto her, "Where hast thou gleaned today? Where wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee." And she showed her mother-in-law of whom she had wrought, and said, "This man with whom I wrought today is Boaz." So let's picture the scene here. Just imagine, first of all, Ruth as she's heading back home. She knows the frame of mind that Naomi's in. She was there when Naomi told her family and her friends when she returned back to Bethlehem, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, bitter. God has been against me. And now here she is, she knows of the kindness that Boaz has shown to her. She knows how much food she's leaving with, more than a month's worth. You can imagine how excited she is to get back home. She knows how this is going to affect Naomi. Also think about what Naomi's day was like this day. I think it went one of two ways for Naomi, the first day that Ruth gleaned. She perhaps just stayed in her rut and was still just miserable. But I think more than likely she was worried. I think she was concerned for Ruth. I think she was pacing. I think she wondered, would she be refused to glean? Because she was a Moabitess. What would others think? Worrying she might be assaulted, harassed by the men, which, as we looked at last week, most likely did take place. So here comes Ruth. She arrives. And Naomi sees all that is with her. She knows this isn't normal. Somebody took notice of her. There's just no way gleaning you're going to return with this much. It's just not even possible. And she's like, "Where did you go? What happened? Who took notice of you? How did this take place?" Ruth, even, I like how Ruth did it. Not only did she show her, give her the 30 pounds that she returned with, but she had some hidden. And it was from the meal. Because remember, Boaz had her in for the lunch. So she clearly stored some of the provision that was given to her in the lunch, probably in a pocket or something. And after she's given her all that she had gleaned from the day, she says, "Now look at this." And no doubt told her, "He brought me to his table. I had lunch with his workers. He was right there." They both rejoice. What we see here is God using Ruth in Naomi's life. The action of others. The faith of someone else affecting another person. Many times it's your faith and your confidence in God that will help somebody else. Many times it's your actions. Remember, it was Ruth. Naomi never told Ruth to go glean. She should have. But she was in a mindset, in a condition where she believed God was against her. It was Ruth, going back to the beginning of chapter 2, that rose up and said, "I'm going to go glean. I can at least do that." Many times when you see others who are maybe in a state of depression or bitterness beginning to take hold, many times God can use your faith to help them. Be mindful of that. Be looking for those opportunities in life. Because we see here Naomi is going to change from being bitter to being blessed, to being thankful, to rejoicing. She's now clearly, as we're going to see her, believing God isn't against her, but God is for her. God is being good in her life. She goes from this hollow person to having great hope. We know that based on her response. Hope comes in. We see how one person trusting the Lord and believing God can affect someone else. We need to seek to be an encouragement. Seek to speak that kind word at the right time, as Proverbs 6:24 deals with. Pleasant words are as a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. Many times it's just that simple word of encouragement. Ruth's actions have greatly helped Naomi. Please remember what we're seeing here is the actions of someone else, the faith of someone else encouraging another person. This has given Naomi hope. And a person who does have bitterness has to remember there is hope in God. As I've said throughout this entire book, I believe a key verse that's not even in here is, "Why art thou cast down on my soul? Hope in God." So often, God uses the faith of someone else to kickstart encouragement in the life of another believer. So we see here what God is giving us, one of the lessons from this, as we see Naomi, who was in a place of bitterness beginning to set in, believing God was against her, we see God using the actions, the faith of someone else. Now listen, Ruth had to protect herself against the bitterness that was setting in on Naomi. You have to understand that bitterness is a poison. It loves company. She had to avoid the words of Naomi. She had to choose, listen, I'm not going there. I'm going to do something. She had to persevere. Secondly, this is important now. Now we switch over to Naomi. God has chosen to use Ruth to be that source of faith for Naomi. But now Naomi has a choice. She needs to see God in this. And that is the acknowledging of God, which is exactly what she does. This is a huge step. Look at verse 20. And Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead." She's speaking of God right here. How God has not left off his kindness. It clicked. I was wrong. I thought God was against me. But the truth is, he hath not left off his kindness. That's true in your life. I don't care what's going on. God hath not left off his kindness. Do not blame God for things he has never promised us. We live in a sin-cursed earth. We will face trials and persecutions and difficulties. But it doesn't change who God is. It doesn't change that he does give the grace and strength for what we're facing. Especially in this world that is just falling apart right before our eyes. The division, the hatred. I mean, think of what we had seen change just in 3 to 5 years. Naomi sees God in it. God hath not left off his kindness. It's all coming together for her now. She's seeing God's goodness. She's seeing God's hand. She's seeing God moving. She knows. And don't you like the suspense that Ruth gave? I love it. Because when she asked who it was, it's the last word she gives. And the man in whom the field I was Boaz. I mean, when she hears this, she knows God's hand is in all of this. She can see it. She's putting it together. So she is choosing. Now, this is important. At times that our mind goes through those dark spots, there are times though when God is whether choosing the faith of someone else or using his word or using preaching, whatever he's choosing, when you begin to see God, acknowledge it. Acknowledge it. When Naomi recognized that she didn't just stay in the rut, she acknowledged, she said, "Wait, God is in this." Again, I can just see her putting it all together in her mind. It was no accident that Ruth went out. It was no accident that she happened to go to the field of Boaz. It was no accident that Boaz himself took notice of her. She now can see what God can do. And I'm glad for that. But wouldn't it have been much better for her had she not forgotten God to begin with? I'll read a quote from G.K. Chesterton wrote this. He said, Hope means hoping when things are hopeless, or it is no virtue at all. As long as matters are really hopeful, hope is mere flattery or platitude. It is only when everything is hopeless that hope begins to be a strength. Now, why is this true with what he's talking about here? It's because it's at those places you have no choice but to hope in God. Because there isn't another circumstance that you can attribute the strength to. It's when you're at a place where you have no choice to say, listen, I have to trust in God. Why art thou cast down, O my soul? Hope in God. So we need to hope in God even when we can't see what He is doing. Naomi lets her know, wow, Boaz is a kinsman redeemer. Now this is important. The word used here is specific. We need to explain this. The word in Hebrew that is key, that it's a family legal term for this, is Gaal, G-A-A-L. That's the word that is used here. That's important. Because that person had scriptural responsibilities to a clan, to his family. Here's some of them. He was responsible for the repurchase of land sold by a family member out of economic necessity. In other words, he's in a place if, which is likely, that Elimelech lost land due to the famine out of economic necessity. He's the one to buy it back. This person in this position that Naomi specifically referred to Boaz as, he was responsible also of tracking down the other person. Let's say a murder takes place of a relative. The person responsible for tracking it down is the same person in this position. Also, if financially able, he was responsible to purchase back family member who was sold into slavery out of economic necessity. He would also be the one to receive paid restitution from a wrongdoing if the family member offended was deceased. He also had the responsibility for marrying the widow to keep the name of the family alive. So there's so much that Naomi sees all of a sudden where God is in this. That the man who has taken notice of the Moabite has showed kindness, compassion, and let's not forget there is no question what we see taking place earlier in chapter 2. He is showing love. And to think God has him in a place where he could marry her. Now, we'll get more into this later as we continue out the book. As I've already mentioned in the very first sermon, Boaz, and what God does here with this amazing story, is very much a picture of our salvation. Boaz is a type of Christ. God often uses real events, and He uses in the picture His love for us and His salvation for us. Boaz is very much a type of Christ. In this story of Boaz and Ruth and Naomi, the Lord pictures what Christ did for us. A beautiful story of love, of redemption. God also pictures His love and redemption for you. You see, when you go back to the Garden of Eden, we belong to God. But that changed when sin came in. We became a slave to sin. Sin became our master. We lost what we had possessed because of the fall. We were separated from God. And just like God put into the law, and not only to get us to go wow, but to even help with understanding with what Jesus Christ did. He became our kinsman redeemer. That's why He had to become a man. There are those today who like to deny that God became a man in the flesh. He most certainly did. He was becoming our kinsman redeemer. He was going to buy us, but He was going to pay the price to get us back. And that took His own blood. You see, to go from bitterness to joy, many times it takes the actions of others, but it also takes you beginning to see the hand of God working and not turning from it. Naomi is seeing God's sovereign hand in place. She's seeing God's care and God's kindness. He has not left off His kindness. She is not denying it, wanting to stay in her bitterness. This is important. Too often people tend to find comfort in their bitterness and refuse to see God working. God, over and over through His long suffering, begins to show where His hand is working, but we refuse to acknowledge it, choosing to stay in the bitterness. Listen, this was a decision that Naomi made. She saw where God was working. She just didn't go back. Well, you know, He'll probably have a crop failure. You know, He'll probably die of a heart attack. I've already seen this happen. I'm not going to get my hope. He's just going to die. You know what she chose to do? Hope. That's what she chose to do. She chose to hope. Why? She saw God working. I can think of that. It's been a while since I've given the story. I'm going to give it out again because it fits. And some here have not heard it. And that is the story referred to as the Dorito story. When we got to New Guinea and all that, when we arrived on the mission field in the October of 2003, I did a couple of survey trips in preparation for the move in. There was no other missionary there. My original plans when I was on deputation was I was going to go to the capital city for 12 months in Port Moresby on the main island. I already knew the Lord was leading us to the island of New Ireland, the Namatanai region. That was set and done in my heart. But I planned on attending the university in the capital city to learn the trade language on how all the... They had over 700 different languages there, so they had a trade language develop, and that's what I was going to learn in the university. And I was going to be working with another missionary who was there. Well, shortly after I began deputation, that missionary contacted me and said he was not going back to PNG. He was on a furlough. He said, things have come up, and he explained to me, and he said, I'm not going back. I did not know anyone else. I didn't know another missionary. I didn't know anyone there. So I made the call, whether right or wrong, God still used it. I made the call, just head right into New Ireland, head right into the jungle. Again, I'm from Cleveland. Part of me thinks this, though. I do. Part of me thinks that if I did go to Moresby, I might not have ever left. I might not have ever left. And so I made the determination, I'm just going to head right in. And so I tried to make arrangements as best I could before I moved my family there. And again, I remember the night before we left, I was sick to my stomach, wanting to throw up. I wasn't like, man, let's get on that plane. I mean, I was afraid. I called my brother up and talked with him. And I called up and I said, Bob, what am I doing? I was sitting on a couch at the time. Then I would walk outside. I'm seeing my four kids. Daniel at the time, he's the oldest. He's about 11, 12 years old. Bethany's 6 years old. And I'm thinking, what am I doing? And we talked for a few minutes. And then the next morning, Pastor Nance, who's preached for us several times, showed up where we were staying at the missionary homes. Picked us up. It was quiet. There was hardly any words spoken. I didn't feel like talking. We packed everything up, all those bags. He dropped us off at the airport there in Tampa, Florida, and we left. It took several days to finally get to our island. And I still remember we got there, and it was just a little tiny plane to get to our island. The last plane ride finally got there. We get in the plane. They don't have enough seats for a family of six at the time. Levi was not born yet. So that's not a problem. Just put him on her lap, that on your lap. You know, there's no FAA standards there. The windshield of the plane is completely cracked. And we head in, and it's just a dirt runway. It's just grass. And we head in and land. They didn't have enough for our bags. I had to trust the guy. I said, I'll come back with your bags later. I hope so, because that's all I have. And he did, actually, several hours. It was only a 17-minute flight from the other island. And he came back later that day with all of our bags. And so we landed. And I had made arrangements. at this place that was built during World War I by Germans on the island. It wasn't even 1,000 square foot. It did not have a kitchen. It had a small little restroom area. And I'd made arrangements to, they had like a, just a main room, like a little office, and then a little hallway with that little tiny bathroom. That's all it was. So I took that main room, I left money behind, and I asked some guys to try and put some dividers in so I could create a total of 3 bedrooms for a small room. So we'd have 1 bedroom, which was the office, and then have a bedroom for Daniel and then for the girls. And so, and then we would build a kitchen outside. I'm from Cleveland. Don't forget any of this. I don't camp. And we arrive. And when I did it, by the way, there was 12 hours of power every single day. 6 hours in the morning, 6 hours at night. It was a what's that called? It was a government outpost where we were staying. And so they had 12 hours of power, 12 hours of power. I mean, 6 hours in the morning, 6 hours at night. And so that's what I expected when I arrived. So we get there. It's about 8:20 in the morning when the plane lands. I still just want to throw up. The plane takes off. And we head down to where we're staying. It was just a half mile from the runway. And we walk in the place that I made. It's already super hot. It's already probably 95 degrees at 8:30 in the morning. And there's a ceiling fan right above us. I'm standing on a ceiling. We just walked in. I'm standing at the ceiling fan. None of us are speaking right now. There's no words being spoken. All of us are like, what are we doing here? And I'm under the ceiling fan. And the power went out. I'm like, oh. And I didn't know it. This is the end of October 2003. Power did not come back on till February the next year. That's the next time I would see power. From that power source. I would end up with a generator here in a few weeks. So the power went out. Then I find out about an hour or two later, went to get some water. There's no water. They had a cistern there. The source of water there is rainwater. You collect water off your roof and goes in a tank, and that's what you do. And there was a cistern. So I went and asked. I said, I was renting it. And I said, there's a cistern, but I don't have any water. She goes, oh, that doesn't hold any water. It has a giant hole in the bottom. So there's no water. There's no power. And did I mention I'm from Cleveland? So anyhow, the trials began immediately. There's no phone system. I can't call back. There's no social media. There's not a person on the planet that has any idea what we're going through at that moment. Not one. And it gets worse. It didn't get better. It just got worse. It was incredibly hot. To drink water, we would have to boil it. We don't have a refrigerator. You can never even get a cool glass of water. This is going on day after day. Malaria hits for the first time. Malaria hits. We were there for about 2 or 3 months, and I was the first one to get it. And sometimes the first time you get it isn't as strong. That wasn't the case with me. Actually, it wasn't the case with Marianne the first time she ended up with it either. It was really strong. And I'd passed out at one point. I knew something really wasn't right. I'd been sick for a couple of days, and I'd passed out. And I woke up, and Marianne had me on her. She was on her knees with my head in her lap trying to wake me up. And I remember I told her I was in great pain. I said, I'm dying. And she went and got help. They dragged me to, we did not have a hospital or a doctor there, but we did have an aid station with nurses, and they dealt with malaria day in and day out. And I just remember getting there, waking up, and it's just a small bay, cement floor, these little metal beds, and with mattresses sitting on them. And I was at the very first bed in the bay. I just remember waking up, my eyes opened, and I'm seeing a rat running above my head that way. And my shirt's off, and I am full of muscles. And so I didn't want anybody coveting or anything like that. And I why is that funny? What's up with that? And I look in the doorway, and it is absolutely packed with people staring at me. They're just wondering if the white guy's going to die. That's all they're doing. Let's just see if he dies. And everybody's just staring at me. And so, anyhow, recovered from that. The medicine they gave began to work and made a recovery from that. But when we arrived there, we went immediately into a survival mode is all we did. There was no ministry taking place. We were just figuring out, all right, how do we survive? There's no calls, you know, phone calls going back, anything like that. Just how do we survive this? And so we began to work on that aspect of it. Now I'm there, let's fast forward about 6 months. There's still really no ministry taking place at all. We're figuring out how to survive. I am trying to learn the trade language actively every day. And I'm struggling with it mightily. And it's an easy one to learn. It is. If you have to learn a foreign language, this is the one you want to learn. But I'm struggling with it. I'm having trouble concentrating. It's difficult. You know, I would have, and by the way, my wife, my kids, they never asked, let's go back. That conversation never happened. The Lord puts the right people in your path. When we were on deputation, there was a missionary, went to missionary training in Florida. And the Lord put us together with a guy who ran the place. He was the director of it. He had did 12 years in Kenya. And he had really, the Lord really laid us on his heart. And so he would take us aside and talk with us. And it's like the Lord let him know what we were going to go through. And so he prepared us for that. He had let us know what it was going to be like when we arrived there. He was dead on. And he said, listen, I'm going to tell you this. He said, for 12 months, you don't go anywhere. He goes, there's no talk of leaving. There's no talk of a break. He said, for 12 months, you have to ride it out. He said, if after 12 months, and keep in mind, we haven't been there yet. We're just on deputation. And the Lord just puts the right people with the right words when you need them. When I would need those words. And he said, after 12 months, if it's still a giant struggle, then you need to talk. But for 12 months, you stay at it. And so we had that going in. So there was no discussion of it whatsoever. But there's times, I'm going to be honest, there was a lot of times with tears, I'd say, Lord, I don't understand this. I don't. I'd listen to my kids at night. There's no power. Michael Forrest, they had it out. It was Michael, it might have been Matthew Forrest who did it. I can't remember which of the Forrest boy did it. It was either Michael or Matthew, though, that I'm certain of. Right before we left for the field, they came to us and gave us these magnetic flashlights. You shake them, and they light up. You don't need batteries or anything. He thought, hey, I thought you guys could use this, and then they gave those to us. And so our kids had those. And so every night we would hear them. Ding, 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 click. Ding, 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 click. You would hear the rats running around everywhere. We would name those things. They were everywhere. I remember the one morning I walked out and I had this lizard. This was in our first week there. I'm from Cleveland. Did I say that? We don't have lizards jump on us when you're in Cleveland. And I walked out one morning. It's about 6:30 in the morning. It's already getting pretty warm. And I think everybody else is still down in bed. And I walked just outside. And something jumps from the roof onto my shoulder. I look and it's a lizard. And I throw that thing off and I jumped up onto this chair. And he's just looking at me all bowed up. And I killed him. No, I don't know. He took off running. So anyhow, we're there about 6 months. There's really no ministry beginning. And it's just a difficult struggle. That's all it is. And I'm not understanding why. I don't even agree with what God is allowing to take place, and that's just the truth. I wasn't mad at him or anything like that, but I certainly didn't agree with it. And then one day in one of the trade stores, there's three trade stores when we arrived there, all of them very small. And this one we called the supermarket. It was smaller than a 7-Eleven. All right, it was the main store. And they had some trade goods there. And I got to know the owner of the store pretty well. And so we're in there, and it had about three or four aisles, and I was just walking by one of the aisles and something caught my attention. And I went back there and I look, and there is a real bag of Doritos. The real deal. A small American bag of Doritos, just one of those snack sizes. I could not believe it. I grabbed that thing, I bought it, And I walked back to where we lived, and I had it behind my back, and we built a kitchen outside, and Mary and all the kids were sitting around the table outside there when I walked up, and I had the bag of Doritos behind my back, and I said, what is my favorite snack? And they all said, Doritos, and I threw that bag down there. We just couldn't believe it. There's nothing there from the States at all. It's this Chinese weird stuff. Your milk is warm milk. I mean, it's just nasty stuff. We couldn't believe it. And so I went back to the store real quick. I went to George, the owner of the store, and I said, you had a bag of a snack called Doritos on your shelf. And I said, but you had just one bag. Do you have more of those? And he goes, yes. And he said, this is what he said. And it was the truth. He said, I did not order those. He said, the case is still in the back. He said, every now and then they'll throw some samples in my shipping container, stuff I might buy in the future or something like that. He said, they threw a case of those in there. And he said, I have the whole case right here. I bought the entire case right there. Now listen, I am not kidding. When I went down that aisle and I saw the Doritos sitting right there, everything changed immediately. My circumstances didn't change. How hard it was, what we were going through day in and day out, did not change. But my view of my circumstances changed. Because when I saw that bag of Doritos right there and those tears hit, I knew it was simply God saying, I know right where you're at. It's all right. I know right where you're at. Do you know what I remember that day? God is in this. There's times in life when especially when God is trying to show it to you so clear, acknowledge God. Quit trying to live in the bitterness and in the misery and acknowledge Him. See His hand at work. Even with all that's going on with our nation, we can still see God working. We can learn several things from this. God is able to direct us where we need to be. Don't question that. He is. We need to know that God's hand is always working in our lives. Romans 8:28 is true. We have to learn to trust Him no matter what situation we're facing. Because why? There's always hope in the Lord. Always. We need to see and know that when you can't see when God's hand is working, you have to trust Him. So when the injustice hits, you trust God to make it right one day. When the hurt comes in, you trust God to make it right. You trust God for His grace and His strength to help. He doesn't promise us a perfect life. He never has. He's been clear since the beginning. He's never deceived us. He simply promised us the strength to make it through it. You trust Him. Thirdly, I'll cover this very quickly. This is important. Now we're going to... She had the acting of someone else's faith that encouraged her. In that, she acknowledged God. I see God working. He hath not left off His kindness. And now we see her acting. She responds. She does something now. Look at 21 through 23. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said, He said unto me also, Thou shalt keep fast by my... Notice the wording. Thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest. And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, It is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of the barley harvest and of wheat harvest and dwelt with her mother-in-law. So what we see her taking place is this. Let me cover this quickly. She's acting now. She's giving wisdom and advice. She just didn't go back, like I said earlier, and say, oh, well, I know it's Boaz. I know he's a kinsman redeemer, but you know what? Again, he's just going to die. No, there's no reason to plan for anything here. He could have a crop failure. He's just being kind for one day. It's all going to end. No, she acts. When God showed His hand is there, that God is sovereignly working, she is trusting God now. She's giving wisdom and advice to put Ruth in a place where God can work. Think of the advice she gives. She's protecting her. He said, she lets Naomi know, listen, he said that I can stay by the young men. They're going to work. They're going to drop off stalks on purpose. He says, listen to me. This is all good. But I want you to do something. You stay by his maidens. She's protecting her purity. She's protecting from any other romance brewing that might come up. She says, this is what... In other words, what I'm trying to show you is, Naomi is getting out of the rut. She's responding now in faith. She wants God to work. She knows He has not left off His kindness. In other words, He's not against me. Listen, the devil has your mind when you begin to believe God is against you. He's won. She provides great wisdom. You know what I love? I love how Ruth responds, by the way. Especially in our culture. Please listen to me at this point. You know what? It simply says Ruth obeyed it. Ruth stayed by the maidens. You know what Ruth didn't do? Which is what we're taught in our Western culture. She didn't say, Naomi, I'm a grown woman. I will work with who I want to work with. I'll do what I want to do. Who do you think you are? I'm the one who went out to glean in the field. Know what she did? She submitted. There was no pride here. There was no ambition. You want to know why? Because when Ruth left her homeland, it was a determination to follow God. It wasn't about her. It was something about the Lord. So we see here with this, you get moving and you press forward. You get moving and you press forward. You get moving and you press forward. Don't get stagnant. Now, this takes us to the end of the harvest. Ruth worked in the field as it instructs us here for the harvest will last 7 weeks. For the next 7 weeks, she worked every day, going in, coming back with all this food. By the way, you think about this, in 7 weeks, we can, I believe, rightly assume she left with the first day probably the same amount she did every day for the next 7 weeks. That's a likely assumption, because those men were not instructed just for that day. It was for the harvest. That means she would have left with enough, more than enough food for the year. For the year. So as I conclude this, let me give these things to help you. Focus on where God has blessed and worked. Not on the trials. Not on what struggles you went through. Focus on where God is blessing and where God is working. So this deals with your thought life. And then you need to persevere. You press on. Both Naomi and Ruth, they did. They began to persevere. Action. And that leads to the rejoicing. Maybe bitterness has grabbed you, or sadness, or worry, or depression. Listen, I want you to know this. God is working. Why art thou cast down, O my soul? Hope in God. He's still there. I have a sermon I preach in John chapter 14. The God who is there. He's there. Don't forget that. With heads bowed and eyes closed,